The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
0.07%. When the world learned that actress Michelle Williams only earned 0.07% of what Mark Wahlberg made for the reshoots in the film All the Money in the World, the outrage was, at least in my house. Oh my God. How about your house, Stu? It was crazy in my house. We were so mad, nobody even talked about it, but it was that bad. It's a headline that looks bad, but before you cry for the eradication of the male species, maybe you should look at the whole story here. In an effort to reduce controversy and to be an Oscar contender, the director, Ridley Scott, decided that he needed to reshoot all of the now disgraced actor Kevin Spacey's scenes in All the Money in the World. Why was he doing that, Stu? He was standing up for, you know, women and people who
were... it was part of the Me Too movement, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
while Kevin Spacey, a lot of the people he was harassing apparently were also men.
Yes.
But not all.
Yeah.
And
it was just to make sure that harassment is taken seriously.
Right.
Right, right, right. So both supporting actors, Mark Wahlberg and Michelle Williams, agreed to do the reshoots. Mark Wahlberg and his agent asked for $1.5 million to do the scenes, while Michelle and her agent negotiated for basically nothing. In fact, she said she would do it for free, but they paid her $1,000 to do the reshoots. So Mark and Michelle are both represented by the same talent agency, and Mark's agent pushed for $1 million payout. So why didn't Michelle do that? Because she's on record agreeing to do it for free. She said, "I'll be wherever they need me to be, whenever they need me, and they could have my salary, they could have my holiday, whatever they want, because I appreciate so much that they're making this massive effort," end quote. Now you're bringing this up that, oh, I didn't get paid anything. Now, Wahlberg, he didn't say those things. The opportunity that this movie presents for Michelle is worth a lot more to her than her salary. All the money in the world could very well be the most important role of her career and make us go, Michelle Williams, do I know Michelle Williams? I say Mark Wahlberg, I know who Mark Wahlberg is. It's possible that she may win an Oscar for her performance. If she does, then everyone will go, oh, Michelle, well, you know her from All the Money in the World. Remember she won that Oscar? Yeah. That's why she was so willing to reshoot without negotiating for more money. And if I may add, as she didn't do the reshoots for free, she was paid $1,000, even though she volunteered to do the job for nothing. So, Michelle Williams, you got a bonus for reshoots and a very real chance of winning an Oscar. If she wins, she'll have something that Mark Wahlberg and all the money in the world can never buy. One of those stupid gold statues that you all covet so much.
It's Thursday, January 11th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
It's amazing, too, because the money, all the money in the world is a movie essentially saying you shouldn't be greedy. Like, that's kind of the message of the movie.
What?
No. And yet, the complaint is that someone didn't get paid enough to do it, which is kind of funny.
Well, first of all, Stu, if that we had to go and reshoot something, we were in a movie and do you think that they would, and I don't mean this, I just mean this because of the industry. Do you think that they would pay you as much money for the reshoot as you would me?
No.
And
they would want, that's what happens.
And do you think that they would believe you if you said, I just can't do it. I don't have it in my schedule. I'm already on other projects. I can't go and shift gears and go back there and do that. Would you believe they would believe that of you as much as they would believe that of me?
Well, probably not, I guess.
Right.
I mean, you know, I mean, people get busy and they take jobs. Like, I mean, an actress can be on something, but she was willing to do it.
Right.
Right. Like, he was right. Like, I've got other stuff going on.
Right.
Pay me.
Right. And also, it kind of goes to him and his ability to demand. It's called the free market.
Yeah.
His ability to demand.
You have to ask for it to get it.
Right.
In this situation, they're asking you to do something that's above and beyond what you've agreed to contractually.
Yeah.
You have to say, hey, yeah, I'll do it, but I'm not going to do it unless you pay me X, Y, and Z.
I'm not
going
to do it for free, which is the opposite of what she said.
Right. She said she would do it for free. And again, right. Like, what do these people have to gain here? Mark Wahlberg is good in that movie. It's a good movie, by the way, if you haven't seen it, All the Money in the World. He's good. He does a good job in it. But Mark Wahlberg, you know, outside of the money, really gets nothing out of that role. I mean, he's a good supporting actor in a movie. He's already a mega star. It doesn't really matter all that much to him. Now, Michelle Williams is also really good in that movie, and she may very well win an Oscar.
Who is it? Is she the mom?
Exactly.
She play the mom?
Yeah, she's the mom.
Okay, so I don't even know. I would not recognize her if she was in the line of the grocery store next to me. I wouldn't know who she was.
I mean, so the point there is that she's actually got a lot more to gain from this movie
yes.
doing well.
Now, the question is this an Oscar thing for her? I mean, no, not the movie. I mean, is this of her bringing up saying, oh, my gosh, look at this. Look at what they're doing to me, a woman, to get the people in Hollywood to even go, oh, my gosh, look at her. She's such a warrior. She's our next Meryl Streep.
Right, that's what she wants out of this, right?
I guess.
You know? I mean, like, I'm looking at her IMDb page, and there's a lot of stuff that she's been in, but not a lot of big, you know, mega hits. And this is an opportunity for her to make a huge name for herself and get all sorts of amazing roles, and she's willing to try to make that happen for free. She doesn't have to. She could have. Think of what would happen if she went in. You know what? I want $1.5 million to do this. What are they going to do? Reshoot her parts too? Because she's in like every scene. So you have nothing you can really do with Michelle Williams. You'd have to pay her. And you know what? They would have. But if an employee comes to you and say, hey, I want to work through Christmas and I also don't want to make any money, are you, you know, you're going to say, okay.
So look, if this was reversed. And Mark Wahlberg said, you know what, I am so disgusted by Kevin Spacey that I'll reshoot it, whatever you need. Just you don't even have to pay me. I'll work over the holidays. This is really important to me. Do you think they would have paid him $1.5 million?
No.
No,
of course
they
not.
Wouldn't have.
He demanded
and if
it.
She said, you're going to have to pay me $1.5 million, they either would have paid her 1.4 or they would have found a way to shoot around her and not paid it. But most likely they would have paid it. And if she would have stood up and said, I made $1.5 million. And Mark Wahlberg then said, oh, my gosh, I can't believe she made what I always paid $1,000. I would say the same thing. Mark, you said you would do it for free.
Yeah. Exactly.
You said it was really important. You'll do it for free. I don't know if you understand how to negotiate.
This is an important part of this. I'll give you another example, too. The movie Wolf of Wall Street. Remember Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah, yeah.
So Leonardo DiCaprio is the big star of that movie. Jonah Hill is in it as well. Now, Jonah Hill plays a very large role in that movie. He's a pretty big star. I mean, like, you know who Jonah Hill is.
Fat jokes don't stop with you.
What?
He's a really big star. And, oh, my God.
He's a very large star.
And a big role.
Yeah. But he is, right? He's someone unlike Michelle Williams. If he walked up next to you in the line of the grocery store, you'd know who he was right away.
Yeah.
And he did that role because he thought it would raise, he really wanted to do the movie. He thought it would raise his profile. He thought it would give him a serious actor chops as opposed to comedic actor chops. So he did that movie for scale. Which I want to say is like, it was low six figures for the entire movie. So unlike Michelle Williams, who got paid a normal giant salary for All the Money in the World and then just didn't get paid for her reshoots, Jonah Hill barely got paid in Hollywood terms for the entire movie, Wolf of Wall Street. And he did it because he wanted to do it. I will take scale. I want to do this because this movie is important to me. It's important to what I think my career is going to be. And that didn't mean Were the movie makers supposed to go to him and say, hey, you know what? No, you need to make 10 times that. Actually, Leo's making $20 million for this, so we got to make sure we pay you $20 million to even it out because you're two men and men we treat equally, unlike women. No. They were like, okay, we'll take you for $100,000. Sure. That sounds like a great deal. And it worked out really well. I mean, this is... By the way, I don't know. I haven't seen this, but it doesn't seem like I've heard Michelle Williams actually complaining about this.
You know what's incredible is... It means something to you. You know, you'd think that you'd be like, no, this means something to me. When did that become dishonorable? This means something to me, and I don't want to get paid for it. This is important that we reshoot this. And somehow or another, really, if you really want to talk about it in fairness terms, how come Mark Wahlberg, how come this is not about money? How come this is about, how come this isn't about Mark Wahlberg? This didn't mean so much to you? You could easily twist this in, oh, so you didn't care about Kevin Spacey. Right. You didn't care about all the abuse that was going on.
That would also be completely
wrong, but it would make more sense than this. This is, look at this. She didn't get paid. No, I thought this was an important thing to do.
People are tweeting that Michelle Williams was Charity in The Greatest Showman, which I know you saw. One of the big roles in that particular
Charity,
movie.
Charity, that was the opera singer?
No, the wife.
Right? Oh, she was great.
Great. I mean, she's really great. Good. And someone's saying that she won an Oscar for Brokeback Mountain a million years ago.
That's one I didn't see.
I didn't see that either. And that's obviously because we're haters.
Yes,
In case you don't know, we don't like movies with mountains in them. We will not see them.
I'm very allergic to horses, even the horses on screen.
Right.
So,
but I mean, this is a smart move for her. If it's something she cares about, this is a great thing for her to do. It makes her easy to work with. And you know what? It's the other part of this is the reason why they needed to do reshoots is because they were taking powerful men who abused their power too seriously. Right? That's the reason the reshoots exist in the first place. The movie is about greed. She is, and we're all like, how come they don't ever see the irony
of what they do. They never, ever do.
These great storytellers would have a sense for irony. They just do not.
They do movie after movie where it's like showing the evil government out of control. And then they leave the studio, the bell rings, and they're like, you know what? We need bigger government.
What?
Glenn Beck.
I have the greatest hashtag Me Too story of all time.
Oh, no. Who touched you, Glenn? Who touched you?
No.
Who
Nobody.
Did it?
Can you find somebody?
No, I cannot.
Okay. So in court on Tuesday, this person said that they were sexually harassed. And they have been touched in their groin area several times in a sexual manner.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Bad, right?
It's terrible, obviously.
Yeah. This charge now, he doesn't have access to Twitter, unfortunately. Otherwise, he would have hashtagged Me Too immediately, is Khalik Shade Mohammed.
The terrorist?
The hairy back guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's been sexually harassed at Gitmo.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awful. Him, too. Mm. He said the changes at the Gitmo policy have led guards to manually search his groin area.
Well, that's a little different.
Hmm?
I want to say manually searching a terrorist groin area is slightly different than sexual harassment at the workplace.
Can I tell you something? If there's a lawsuit to be had here, it's not that... somebody touched his groin. It's that we made somebody touch his groin.
That's a great point.
I would counter sue. Are you kidding me? Like, I want to touch him in the groin area? Have you seen the man?
I will say this.
Yeah.
He has a right to be believed.
He does.
He has, not to be heard, not to be taken seriously, he has a right to be believed. So I immediately have jumped to the fact that he was actually sexually harassed. And I think whatever soldier, whatever, you know, person did this should be removed from their position and never work again.
So I would like to know, do you get to join the Me Too Club if you've ever gone to the airport?
Under Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's construct of it, I think you do.
But you know what? Pat says that he feels like he was sexually violated.
Yeah, he's always been very sensitive on the TSA stuff.
Yeah, but you'd shake Pat's hand and he's like, I feel very uncomfortable. He's a little touchy feely guy. He's not a hugger. So, you know, somebody saying grabbing him by his arm is kind of like, whoa, what are you touching me for? But he does say that he feels like he was sexually harassed at airports.
And I will say one of the things we've learned as we've gone through the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that it's not important what the motivation of the person doing the touching is. For example, if someone touches you on your back or gives you a kiss on the cheek, mm-hmm. and they're doing it because they do it to everybody and it is not to them a sexual thing at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's only important what the person receiving that contact feels, right? If they, not even at that time, if they 6 months, 6 years, 60 years later feel that that interaction was a negative one for them, then we believe the person who was touched and we destroy the person who did the touching, whether it has to do with a negative sexual intent or if it was just passing.
Well,
that's kind of our current philosophy on the matter.
I want to bring this up, that there is a sexual charge coming out against me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my mother said that apparently I used to, suckle on her when I was very uncomfortable.
Beck.
And
Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello and welcome to the program. Coming up, we're going to go into some of the predictions. I think today is tech predictions.
Yes, technology.
And it's weird because a lot of these tech things are already happening. Yesterday, we told you about Kodak coin. This is the first time to be excited if you have anything to do with Kodak. It's like they learned their lesson. You know the story about how they went out of business? How fast that happened? Oh, you don't know this? This is fascinating. So Kodak, you know, made film, obviously. They were the film dealer for everybody. They were state-of-the-art film and film processing. And they had a billion employees in Rochester, New York. And they see the digital camera. And they said, well, that's not going to really take off. And so they decided to not, we'll let other people do the digital thing. We'll just stay in film. One Christmas went by, and it was the first Christmas that digital cameras started to take off. They met again, and they were like, no, we are a film company. Three Christmases later, they were almost out of business. It happened that fast. They went from the Titan to 3 years later, nothing. And then they were like, maybe we should do the digital thing. And it was too late. So the first thing that I think Kodak has done that is really smart is they have just come out. They announced it, I think, Monday or Tuesday, a Kodak coin. And it's like Bitcoin. But this is in one of my predictions, that some company is going to do this and they're going to use blockchain and coin to do it. And I said in the prediction that it would be Facebook or Apple or somebody like that. Kodak is the one that comes out and does it. And what they've done is, you know how you have, the stock photo thing? What is it? Not Reuters, but, you always see it. You go there for stock photos of news things. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but
yeah, there's a few companies that do.
Yeah,
that
there's a company that, you know, the big one takes you. You sell your or you you post your photo of, you know, I've got the president picking his nose, and they put it on a service, and that service goes and everybody has it. And if you want to use it for television or radio or newspaper or something, that you just buy it from them, and then that company pays you.
Getty Images.
Getty Images. Yeah. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Okay, so. Kodak has decided they're going to do it. And so what they do is in your camera, you will take pictures and it will automatically go into blockchain and be held by you. And you can immediately post it. I mean, you take it and it posts for sale from Kodak. Mm. And then there's no middleman. They're not negotiating anything. It's just posted. They want to buy it. They buy it through Kodak Coin. You get paid immediately, and it's simple, and there's no middleman. That's Kodak Coin.
That's great.
That's really brilliant.
It's interesting, too, because they're having a big renaissance because they've tied themselves to this blockchain idea.
Yeah.
And that's happening to a lot of companies. And it's a lot of them are, like, very strange stories. Like this Chanticleer Holdings, if big fan of them.
No, Chanticleer?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it.
They own several Hooters restaurants, 9 Hooters restaurants.
Okay, all right.
And they own some of the stock of Hooters of America.
I'm trying to figure out the connection to blockchain.
Right. That's what a lot of people are doing.
Right, okay.
So they said it was a couple weeks ago that they would use blockchain-related technology for its customer rewards program. Essentially, they just made a press release about blockchain, and their stock went up 50%.
Okay, that happened. I saw that. Not that story. I saw that happen last year. There was another company that just has nothing. They didn't even announce that they were putting blockchain. Nothing.
Yeah.
They just put blockchain in their name.
Yeah.
It was like Glenn's Blockchain, and it went up. And the company has nothing to do with blockchain. They just were like, let's make some money off this blockchain thing.
That's really smart. They're getting.
Yeah, it's not going to work really well. I mean, it's like, you know, that's Warren Buffett saying, don't invest if you don't know how it works. You know, most people don't even understand what blockchain is, let alone Glenn's blockchain. That's just somebody out there going, I know, let's put some money in that blockchain thing.
Right. They're thinking, okay, here's a new company or a company that's changing its goals, and now they're going to be working in blockchain. Get in now.
Get in
early. So whoever owns that company increases their cash by 50% or whatever it is. And then they can sell and make a bunch of money. And then when it turns out that they're not actually doing it, eventually the stock will surely come down. But it's a good idea.
So 2 days ago, I had about a 2-hour meeting with a guy from Silicon Valley who's a real mover and shaker and who's been instrumental in some of the biggest companies around now, the new tech companies, and had a fascinating conversation. Yesterday, Stu and I had a conversation with a blockchain and cryptocurrency guy. And man, I hope he's right.
Yeah, he was optimistic, I would say.
Yeah. What did he say that he thought Bitcoin would go up to?
He said several hundred, 500,000.
500,000, yeah. I thought. And he didn't put a time period on that, did he?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. And he's been right about a lot of these things. You know, I'm sure he's been wrong about a lot of these as well, but he's been right about a lot of these. And he was like, yeah, there's, you know, there's a lot to learn, like Ethereum. He taught us about Ethereum a little bit yesterday. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that was like an operating system.
Yeah, it is. What a lot of these like secondary, or even below that, coins are built on. It's like that's like the operating system for these new, Bitcoin types. I'm trying to explain this in a way that anyone who doesn't know this understands it. But it's basically like if you're going to create the new Bitcoin, right? Kodak coin comes out, it's probably built on Ethereum. Ethereum is essentially the operating system for it.
I was reading some stuff from Milton Friedman. We put it in a monologue on TV last night. If you missed it, you should watch it. But Milton Friedman talked about the internet and said the internet is going to be gigantic and it will really change things. It will change government and everything else once you come up with a digital currency. And here we are. We're at a digital currency.
Yeah.
And you just wonder, how are the governments of the world when push comes to shove, they're so far behind that they don't. I mean, I remember having a conversation with somebody in Congress who sits on a committee for this kind of stuff. And I was talking to them about, you know, technology that's coming. I have a rudimentary at best understanding of this stuff. And they just kept looking at me and blinking. And they were in a room with a few people. And they were like, huh, we're going to have to look into that. I mean, maybe we should look at, is there regulation that we should be looking into? And I went, what? By the time you guys even figure this out, it's too late.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have no concept of what's coming.
Yeah, people talk about this, and it's not a matter of whether cryptocurrencies fail because the governments try to stop them. It's the idea of whether governments will fail because of cryptocurrencies.
Correct.
It's interesting, and I think, like, these things obviously have been in the news a lot. I think there's different levels of interest, right? Like, yeah, the top tier are people who are real investors and really know this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. There's a secondary tier.
Was I some more NyQuil?
I know. I'm going to take a little bit more.
Yeah.
The secondary tier of people who know a decent amount about it and maybe invest in it, right? Then there's people who kind of just follow the news and are interested in things like a money supply that the government can't inflate. I think a lot of people in our audience are interested in that aspect of it. The idea that that could solve a thing we've been complaining about for decades.
Forever.
Right?
Forever.
Oh, and it's not centralized through a government. There's no trusted source. It's all done automatically. And it takes government nonsense out of the process. I think there's a level of interest there. And I think at the very bottom of it is just, I like hearing stories about people getting mega rich off of things. I love those stories where, like, someone invests a dollar. Like, we had someone who wrote in yesterday to one of our stories on Facebook and said they got in an argument
with their wife
in 2013 about buying 500 Bitcoins.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, 2013.
How much was that?
Let me look at the Bitcoin chart here real quick.
I didn't realize it was 500 Bitcoins.
500.
Somebody in our audience, we have to talk to you.
Yes.
If that's you, you have to call in.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine?
Okay, so how much was it?
So I'm looking.
So he had an argument with his wife, and she said, we're not going to put money in Bitcoin. And he said, honey, right now, it will cost us how much?
I'm looking that up.
We should invest 500 Bitcoin.
Can you imagine? Can you freaking
2013,
imagine?
That had to be.
Okay, so 2013, we're at.
It had to be 200?
Yeah, so 2013, it ranged. That was the year that it had its first, what they were calling at the time, a bubble, where it peaked at $1,000, okay? But then it ran down, and it was between, he said 2012 or 2013. So 2013, it was, for most of the year, about $100. At the beginning of 2013, it was $13.
Oh, my God.
So let's take it average.
So if he says 20, let's say $50.
Yeah.
So, let's say $50.
Yeah, so that would have been $25,000, right? 50 times 500 is $25,000. So that's a good, I mean, so you think, I don't know.
Now do 500 times, let's say, 15,000.
15,000 will get you a better return of $7.5 million.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said, I have.
Are they still together?
I thought it's a great way to ask them.
Are they still together? We have to track that listener down.
Yes, he said, we had the argument, I lost the argument, and I'm still poor. Was it the way he described it? 500 Bitcoins. He must have had some money, right? I mean, even at the lowest, it would have been $5,000 or $8,000. But $7.5 million is better than $8,000 in money. at least that's my impression.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Is that Common Core math?
Yeah, a little.
Yeah.
I have to show my work.
Yeah, show your work on that.
But that's nothing compared to the guys who founded Ripple. Now, Ripple is another cryptocurrency. So you have Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin. Ripple
seems pretty shady.
Well,
only because they announced that Ripple was going to go on to Coinbase, and if Coinbase
they didn't announce that. That was a rumor. That is not.
That was a rumor. That wasn't.
Yes, that is not. There's no reason to believe that that's happening at this point.
No, I know that, but I thought it came from them.
No, I don't think so.
Okay,
no, I don't think so.
Well, somebody and it looked pretty. It looked pretty solid, and it went from like $1.50 to $3.50, $3.90, something like that.
And it's fallen down a little. It's in the high $1 right now. But
yeah,
it was also 0.6 cents in 2017. 0.6 cents is what it was. You could have bought these things for 0.6 cents. Now, the way that it's different than, let's say, Bitcoin. Bitcoin, as I was talking about, like, it's not centralized, right? And it is, there's a limited amount of Bitcoins that will ever be created. So there's no inflationary risk here. Most of the Bitcoins, 80-some-odd% of them, are already out. So there's, you know, there's not an inflation there. Ripple, they created 100 billion of these things upon inception. Okay, so they created 100 billion of them, and they did, the way they gave them away was like they did giveaways, they did all sorts of things, but they've only released a third of them. So 66 billion of these Ripple coins are held by the company, which was like three guys who created them. Okay, 66 billion. They're currently about $2 per coin. Okay, so that's a lot of money. The way this breaks down, Forbes looked at it. It's actually insane. The co-founder and CEO, Chris Larson, who stepped down in November 2016, he now serves as the executive chairman of Ripple. He has 5.19 billion Ripple tokens in his personal holdings and a 17% stake in the company.
He's got $5
billion himself. No, he's got more than that. His net worth currently, and this was, the price was slightly higher than it is right now, but when this was written, net worth personally, $37.3 billion.
Oh, my gosh.
That would make him the 15th richest American on the 2017 Forbes 400 list.
This stuff is going to...
Steve Ballmer.
This stuff is going to change the world. Think of the power shift. Here's a guy who had nothing, and now he's got $37 billion. I mean, you know, he hit it in the wrong hands. Hooters is going to be where Congress meets.
Got news for you. They're already meeting there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It is a Hooters without the wings.
By the way, the way they have this formatted is they can release 1 billion new tokens every month. So every month they can just bring in cash, $2-3 billion to fund this operation. And they're trying to make it a big...
That sounds like
bank
a Ponzi
payment
scheme in a way, because you can print them. That's why Bitcoin is so good. It just can't print them.
Yeah, they can
stop making them.
This way you can really flood the market. But it's a really interesting project.
Stu, are you following the release of the GPS transcripts?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I know Dianne Feinstein apologized to Chuck Grassley for not letting him know it was
coming. Did you see the apology? She said, "I'm sorry, I was just pressured to do it."
Pressured to do it by whom?
Exactly. And when Chuck said, "By whom?" she said, "Oh, I didn't mean that. I mean, I'm sorry." What the hell is happening with the Fusion GPS thing? More on this and a look into what's going to happen this year technology-wise next.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.